The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
We'll talk about the Dabo Sweeney comments in a few minutes, as well as the Masters, of course, which ended late yesterday afternoon in Augusta. Let's continue with more phone calls here. Ryan is in Cincinnati. Hello, Ryan.
What's up, Grim Reaper?
How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. Just pulling a Shane, calling about 4 o'clock, like his old time, and was about to pull a Tammy and call from the toilet, but I thought better of it, even though I want to remind you of the glory days on the show.
Oh, yeah. They were such... the glory days when the show was worth listening to and watching. Unlike today.
Well, Paul, yeah, I'm just trying to cheer you up, bud. So, hey, Paul, I actually got a serious question here for once. Back in the 90s, when you broke the Antonio Langham story, did Alabama, two things with this, did Alabama get thrown on probation because of that? And how would a situation like that work today with the NIL? I mean, could an agent claim they're given name, image, and likeness for that?
No, the Antonio Langham story, Antonio Langham was a big star. He saved the 1992 national championship game against Florida with an interception, I believe it was for a pick six. And he was, I'm trying to remember, I think it was right before the national championship game against Miami. He signed with an agent on a napkin. Got a very small amount of money, and when the university discovered it, they I believe tried to, we're talking 27 years ago, I'm trying almost 30 years ago, I think they tried to the reason the story came out was because of this show, and it wasn't we got a call from a guy, or a guy came to see us, I don't remember. He worked for a law office, and somehow they intercepted a letter between either Alabama or the NCAA and the SEC office. It ended up in this guy's office, which was about 3 blocks from the SEC. Why this guy did this, I'll never know, but he brought it down to us, and I think we ended up checking it out and reported it. Now, that itself did not create the story was already in the mix. The problem Alabama had was if Alabama had, once they found out about it, called the NCAA and said, we just discovered this guy signed with an agent on a napkin, he probably would have been suspended for 3 games. They paid the money, restitution, et cetera. Instead, Alabama decided to fight it because Gene Stallings said, he got very aggravated. He actually threw an NCAA investigator out of his office. On one hand, you want to give him a standing ovation and an award. on the other hand, it really made a mess out of the case. And Alabama initially got 3 years sanctioned. I think they were able to appeal the third year. But they were kept off television for 2 years and lost a massive amount of scholarships.
Yeah, because that set them back. I do remember that.
All for nothing. And then here's what's so ironic. 6 years later, when the next case came along, this was the Albert Means case out of Memphis. University decided to roll over and play dead like they were trying to win the Westminster Dog Kennel Show. And had they fought that, they probably would have come out okay, but they ended up getting slammed and nearly put out of business.
Yeah, because that's when they nearly got the death penalty. What was that agent's name, Logan? Was it Logan Smith or Young? Logan Young?
He was the Memphis booster who why there's never been a 30 for 30 on Logan Young, I'll never know.
That'd be an interesting thing. Hey, one more thing.
I just gave myself a good idea.
Yeah. Who's streaks more likely to last? Legends calls right now, just knocking them out of the park and trying to run down DiMaggio, or the Yankee callers crying every day or forever about the SEC?
Well, here's the thing about legend, as great a caller as legend is, he's due for a bad day. The Yankee callers will never disappoint with their whining.
Yeah, just like I said, I'm going to send you those adoption papers. I don't want to be considered with them. I want to be an adopted Southerner. That's Southern hospitality. I love it.
Hey, thank you.
Take care, bud.
Very much. Great to hear from you. Sherman is up next. Hello, Sherman.
How are you, Paul?
Sherman, we are doing great. Thank you.
Paul, I want to commend you on the manner in which you conduct your show. It's unreal.
Thank you.
Well, I'll tell you, I spent 93 years old and spent 50 years in the insurance business, and I've been listening to all these people talking about this money, money, money. I'm telling you, money follows power, and whoever's got the power is the one's going to get the best athletes in this NIL thing, and it wouldn't surprise me one bit that your mid-majors don't wind up as a farm team for the big ones.
That's a good point. That is an excellent point there, Sherman. You're probably right. Well, hey, well, I appreciate your kind words, and you be well.
Take care. Thank you.
By the way, let me correct myself. I knew it didn't make sense because otherwise it would have infringed on the national championship. Langham signed with an agent after the win over Miami in the early mornings of 1993, not before the game. It wouldn't have made very little sense. So I wanted to correct that before everyone started calling in and talking about something that happened 29 years ago. AJ is up next.
Hey, Paul.
Hello, AJ.
That was what I told the guy a while ago. They signed the napkin after the national championship game, and he was needing to buy a suit for a funeral in his family, I think. What it was, $265.
Oh, my goodness, that is amazing. I mean, that just shows you how absolutely corrupt the NCAA is.
Oh, yeah, it's kind of a corrupt situation. Reckon how Rafael Palmeiro feels and Roger, pitcher from Texas, feels about the steroid deal. Now, look, did you see Tiger this weekend? He's been on steroids now for a long time, but they don't have much to say about that, do they?
AJ, thank you. I don't know. Let me say this about Tiger. I don't know what he's on, and I don't care what he's on. I think what he did throughout those 4 days in Augusta is really one of the more remarkable stories I've ever seen. And listen, I never thought he was going to win, and most people didn't either. But the idea that Tiger Woods could come back from near death and do what he did, not just on the golf course. It was one thing to play well. He played extraordinarily well the first 2 days, and it caught up to him. But what he did for the game of golf, I mean, let's be honest. How many of you had heard of Scottie Scheffler until Thursday afternoon? He was the number one golfer in the world, and I could not have been able to pick him out of a lineup. Now I can. We will take a break. Speaking about the Masters, our next guest has been to Augusta recently. We'll talk to him about that, as well as Dabo Swinney opening his trap yet again.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And welcome back. Gene Sapikoff, a friend from Charleston, who covers Clemson and South Carolina when he's not playing golf or covering golf. He is joining us now. Gene, welcome back to the real world. How are you?
Thanks for having me on, Paul, and I hope you and your family are doing well.
I want to talk about Dabo, but I know you've got golf on the brain with the tournament this week, the one last week. So tell us about your thoughts on what we just got through watching. I mean, we've had some amazing moments in Augusta, but the last 4 days have been pretty historic.
Paul, I don't know about you, but I expected Greg Sankey to be running out on that 18th green and claiming Scottie Scheffler for the SEC, which, you know, he's a Texas guy. Overall, I think it was just ridiculous drama with Scheffler, who I think is going to win, you know, multiple majors this just in. And then just the Tiger drama. I mean, you know how it is at Augusta, because I know you've covered many Masters, but just I almost walked with him coming off the green into the press area under the oak tree by the clubhouse. And he just didn't look well, you know, and just for him to get around the course over the weekend, I don't care if he shot back-to-back 78s, I think was as magnificent as anything he's done at Augusta, which is saying a lot.
That's so interesting. So, Gene, as you do so well, take us inside the ropes. And for those who don't know, the big oak tree is anytime you're going to meet somebody at the Masters, you just tell them, I'll meet you at the oak tree. And the only problem is, and I've tried to do this, there's like 5,000 other people have the same idea.
Yeah, if you're trying to get one of the rookies or something, that's a little easier than Tiger Woods or Scottie Scheffler. But, yeah, the access is really great at the Masters, and it was weird weather, no doubt about it, with damp grounds on Thursday, wind on Friday, and very cold on Saturday.
Seriously, I mean, it looked just obscenely cold. How did the Lords of Augusta National allow that?
I don't know, because I know that the one mosquito that ever appeared at Augusta is now in some sort of bug laboratory in New York City. He was escorted off the property in 94. But, yeah, you'd think they could have controlled that, but they didn't. But, hey, you know, I know you've been there when it's been in the 90s and you're trying to walk all over the course for several hours, and that's more uncomfortable than it was on Saturday.
And there was a day, and I remember it, I can't remember, 25 years ago, whatever it was, Gene, you may have been there. It was in the 30s. I remember Nick was bundled up like an Eskimo. It may have been 30 years ago or 35 years ago, but it you get one of those every 10 or 15 years. In terms of Tiger, 25 years ago, we saw the buzz. It was unlike anything I had ever witnessed. I mean, you've covered them all. How is this different, just in terms of the fans and the anticipation?
You know, so in 97, he wins as a kid, 21 years old, and then obliterates things just a few years later, all the records. And then, of course, in 2019, Paul wins at 43 years old. But this is something I think a lot of people can relate to, and he was even talking about, when it's cold, my body doesn't feel as well now at 46 years old as it did just a few years ago. And then to know that he had his leg shattered in a couple different places, two open fractures, and not having played any competitive golf to get in there. I mean, if people go do workouts or run or lift weights, and you're suddenly trying to do it at your best level, play tennis, whatever, and you haven't done it, and now you've got to do it on the largest stage, not just in golf, but in sports probably. That, again, just for him to make the cut and then to be out there and to get through it, because watching him on the range, and I went out there and watched him Sunday morning, I wasn't sure he was going to make it to the first tee.
Hmm. Before we get to football, Gene, Augusta is a great people watching place, as you mentioned. Shane Beamer was there the other day. Nick Saban spotted by the putting green yesterday, supporting Justin Thomas. Give us your greatest hits on people that you've run into over there that maybe you wouldn't have expected.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's HIMS.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. HIMS.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
I know it sounds weird, but I've always got the eye out for college football, and Lynn Swann and Peyton Manning are pretty easy to spot in green jackets. So, you know, seeing Lynn Swann talking to Larry Fitzgerald, the great NFL receiver, I was thinking they were trying to fix the playoff on Friday. But I think Michael Jordan is the guy that sticks out for me. I mean, you know, there have been a lot of other celebrities. I mean, former Secretary of State is wearing a green jacket, Condi Rice. Right. But, yeah, I think Michael Jordan really sticks out to me, Paul.
Let's get to college ball with the latest from Dabo Swinney that college football is wrecked. It's coming apart at the seams. I know these are shocking revelations to you and I, but what does that mean? And how do you think it's going to play in Clemsonville?
It'll probably play decently because just about whatever he says, they'll eat up. But I'll tell you what, overall, Paul, you know the transfer portal and NIL are working well for players when coaches who have had all this control for years and years are really mad. And, I mean, I think this where this is going is, you know, quarterbacks and other stars, just like most places in the NFL, are eventually going to be making more money than coaches, which is, I don't know, probably either as it should be or a lot closer to fair. But yeah, Chris Lowe did a great job. I know you know Chris well, and he's a native South Carolinian. I've known him for 30 years, kind of dating ourselves there. But he did a great job getting Dabo to basically summarize all of his complaints that he's had over the last few years. And Paul, this is definitely, no doubt about it, a newer, angrier Dabo, who has always been for, you know, as long as I've known him, and I think you've known him longer than me because going back to his playing days at Alabama, but he's been amusingly upbeat about just about everything from his parking space to the state of his team over the years, and now he's a ticked-off dude.
And he's not alone, Gene. Other coaches have said equal to that or more privately, and I suspect now that Dabo has come out, others will, including the biggest and the baddest of them all. But your own view of where we are, because you know you can't get an NCAA rule change, let alone blow the whole thing up in a couple of years.
No. Well, here's the thing. First of all, I recommend people read Chris Lowe's fine. It's actually two stories. One is a story and one's a Q&A with Dabo. But, Paul, in the piece, Dabo says that the problem is, you know, there's no rules, there's no uniformity, and it's Alabama has one rule and Middle Tennessee has another. Well, that's not the problem right now, Paul. It's not Alabama versus Middle Tennessee. He says Alabama versus Middle Tennessee. It's more like Alabama versus Wake Forest or Georgia versus Cal. And until these Power Five conference commissioners and athletic directors can get together, there's going to be more and more problems. I mean, you can point right to Dabo's ACC and Jim Phillips, the new commissioner who was part of that 8-3 vote against the playoff. He badly, badly misread the college football room. And really, he needs to go watch the movie Space Jam, where it's repeated over and over. The customer is always right. The customer wants a playoff.
And I'm glad you mentioned Jim Phillips. Yeah, I'll spare you the I really like the guy and all that. You hear that about everyone. But I don't know when I've been more disappointed and shocked by someone who is usually well-thinking to have heard some of the things that he said recently about the playoff and all these things that they have to fix first. Well, they have no chance of fixing those things. Gene, you know that, and I know that, and everybody watching and listening knows that. So, you know, how has anyone, especially the ACC, benefited by kicking the CFP down the road 4 or 5 years?
Yeah, I mean, Jim Phillips obviously did a good job at Northwestern. I mean, they have this strangely palatial building along the lake there, which is very un-Northwestern-like, and I think was brought in as kind of a football guy, which is strange for the old basketball league, the ACC. But, Paul, he and these other people running these five major conferences, and most of them, the four outside of Greg Sankey, they've got to come up with some basic rules and some sort of assertive decision-making and solutions and let the NCAA know that this is going to be the new law. And, you know, the portal's here to stay, essentially. There's no doubt about it. And if anything, NIL is likely to get probably more individual player representation and less of this collective stuff. So, I mean, the ACC is not part of the solution right now. It's kind of more part of the problem.
On the field, certainly, I don't know when I've seen more buzz created by a school as we have seen with Shane Beamer in Columbia. I'm not suggesting any shifting of the swing saw, because, you know, we saw Clemson just beat them to a pulp a few months ago. But your thoughts on South Carolina, and is the buzz real? Can that be translated not just to 8-5 seasons, but can South Carolina compete again sometime soon?
I think so, but it's going to be gradual. It's not going to be a quick fix thing. I mean, you can go from 7-6 to maybe 7-6 again, and then 8-5. Shane Beamer thinks that he has more depth at every single position on offense right now than he did in 2021, of course, starting with Spencer Rattler at quarterback. But that's a quarterback room that was one of the two weakest in the SEC. The defense still has some holes, but, you know, it dominated the offense in the last scrimmage of spring, whatever that means. Here's the thing, you know, it's always a Clemson-South Carolina comparison in the Palmetto State, and Clemson can always rely on this easier schedule to kind of gradually get things fixed. And South Carolina plays its first SEC game of 2022 at Arkansas, where I guarantee Sam Pittman's going to be ready. And that's going to be a tough opener, and schedule doesn't get a lot easier from there.
Yeah, and of all the bad decisions athletic directors have made, and you and I could spend a lot of time at your palatial beach house kicking back, but Ray Tanner giving Will Muschamp an extension, I think, is definitely in contention, is it not?
Yeah, it's one of those context of the time things. Like, well, he just beat Jim Harbaugh in Michigan in a, you know, bowl game or something like that. But, yeah, that was not a good idea, and it costs money, and it's also had something to do with the way that South Carolina, in its hires of its last football coach, men's basketball coach, and baseball coach, went way under the SEC average to bring those folks in.
Well done, always, Gene Sapochoff from the Post and Courier. Appreciate it, Gene. We are heading to a break. More of your phone calls, a conversation with starting quarterback at Penn State, who is now an NIL entrepreneur. Sean Clifford joins us in about 30 minutes. Your phone calls are next.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Good conversation there with Gene. We'll talk to Sean Clifford in about 30 minutes. More of your phone calls right now. If you want to give us a ring, we will take you at 855-242-7285. Let's check in with John, who is in Kentucky. Hello, John.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Really do love your show. I was listening last week or so, and there was some Calipari bashing going on, which may or may not be deserved. But one thing that was mentioned was about the kids that didn't make it in the NBA, and that he just kind of left those kids hanging, or at least that's what I got out of it. But the fact is, those kids can come back to the university at any point in their lifetime and finish their degree. So don't think he leaves them hanging.
Yeah, when fans are unhappy, they tend to throw stuff out. And I mean, one thing about Cal, you can easily quibble about his in-game coaching, but you can't quibble about what he has represented and the impact that he has had on so many people's lives in that state, especially his players.
true, Paul. Thank you.
Thank you. Very nice of you to call. Let's talk to Mad Dog. Hello, Mad Dog.
Good afternoon, Paul. How you doing?
Mad Dog, we are doing great. Thank you.
So I haven't been able to listen as much as I'd like to, and I hope you haven't talked about this, but I thought maybe I could bring up way too early potential Heisman winners.
Well, we can. I think you'll start with the favorite in the race, the one who won it last year. That would be Bryce Young. But I think that's understandable. So who you got?
Well, you won't be shocked that I just placed a bet in Las Vegas on a dark horse long shot at 100-1, and that is Stetson Bennett. And I'd like to plead my case.
Good luck.
Can I tell you why I'm thinking this?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, well, obviously, most likely, you need to be a quarterback. Check.
That's
you need to
correct.
Be on a top-ranked team. That would hopefully be a check. And then surrounding the team, you obviously have to have a strong cast. Well, mm-hmm. He's got a great O-line coming back.
Right.
He's got great running backs coming back in Milton and McIntosh. He's got some all-pro tight ends coming back in Brock Bowers, Darnell Washington.
Let me stop you, Mad Dog, because first of all, you have not made a winning case. I don't even know if he's going to be the starter at the end of the season.
Well, this time last year, he wasn't even getting reps.
We know that. Everyone followed the story, but you're talking about winning the Heisman. To win the Heisman, what I'm about to say is self-explanatory. You have to be a contender on that second weekend in December, or you have had to have played the most amazing year, such as RG3, Johnny Manziel. You have to be something extraordinary, or Lamar Jackson. Right now, the favorites are going to be C.J. Stroud. You're going to get a lot of Caleb Williams. I mean, you may even see a few bets on Spencer Rattler because he was the favorite last year. But, you know, I mean, I don't mind fandom. That's great. Everyone loves the Stetson Bennett story. Although, even after what he did last year, I don't think you're going to see too many people bet on him to win as the favorite. Not the favorite, but to win the Heisman.
Oh, no, absolutely not. I'm making a case as a dark horse long shot.
Yeah. How about no shot?
Hold on. Let me finish. About with tight ends, Brock Bowers, Daniel Washington.
I know a lot of people. I know the Bennett family is clipping that right now just for the Heisman ceremony next year. I'll be prominently figured.
What about Arik Gilbert as the wild card in the tight end who's now back on the team?
Well, I'll ask you a question, Mad Dog. Who was the last tight end to win the Heisman?
No. I'm not saying for him to win. I'm saying as part of the supporting cast.
I don't mean to be disrespectful to Arik Gilbert, but for me to take a chance on him after everything we've seen, count me out.
Understood. I'm just saying that's a piece of the puzzle,
mm-hmm.
And I haven't even gotten to the receivers yet. So you got AD
Mitchell
coming back.
The one thing you do have going for you, Mad Dog, is you have a relatively easy schedule. And that puts you in contention because you have a chance for some big games. And ultimately, you have the Alabama game or some other game in the SEC championship game that you can wrap it up. And that's really where you have to win it. If you remember, Bryce Young was out of it last year. I think I was talking to his dad at one game, and C.J. Stroud had taken it over, and others had as well. And the next thing you know, he has a terrible game against Auburn, but he wins the game at the end. He has a magnificent game against Georgia, and he wins the Heisman Trophy. Let's go to Stephen in South Carolina. Hello, Stephen. Go right ahead.
Paul, a few days late, but opening day of baseball got a great story from you. My friend from Gaffney, South Carolina, Grady Sizemore, his son Grady Jr. had a great series with the Cleveland Indians and then went through some rehab. I think it was 2011, opening day. He's with the Red Sox, my dad's favorite team. He hits a home run in Fenway Park,
first at bat.
But here I got one for you. 1946 Boston Red Sox. Two players on the roster from the very, very small town of Shannon, Georgia, north of Rome. Who were they?
The 46 Red Sox?
46 Red Sox. Okay, I'll go ahead and
I
tell you.
I will try to act like I have not only no idea, I don't have a clue.
Well, one was Aunt Virginia's boyfriend, who family legend is almost married Aunt Virginia, Leon Culberson, either the grandfather or the great uncle of Charlie Culberson.
Okay.
And the other was Rudy York.
Do you know him, Randy? You're a baseball fan. Okay, next one.
Oh, okay, Rudy York. For Leon, just check out David Halberstam, the Pulitzer Prize winner, his book, The Teammates. It's just a great book.
Okay, now
do you want to hear?
After a 3-minute conversation, you finally mentioned a name I know, David Halberstam.
Well, I knew I'd pick you up there sooner or later. Do you have time for my great Danny Ford story?
I would love nothing more than to hear about Danny Ford.
I saw Danny about a month ago in Dyer's. It's where he goes Tuesday through Friday outside Pendleton, meeting three. And my brother heard this story in the flesh. Obed Arere, who was in Clemson Danny's first year, he wasn't the head coach yet, but Obed Arere was a soccer player, and Clemson needed a field goal kicker. And so they got Obed, and Obed was getting some regional and national news. I mean, he was just knocking it out of the park, and he's a hero. So he goes up to a small college north of Greenville where my brother was to see some of his friends from the Mideast, other soccer players. Football, of course, was all new to them, and they said, Obed, tell us, have you ever had to tackle a man? He said, yes, once. He said, I kicked the ball off deep, like coach tell me. I looked down the field at Clemson, all my orange men on the ground. One man in red from NC State, he's running at me. And I'll clean this up for the television. They said, Obed, what did you do? He said, I jumped on his back, and I wrote the mother F-bomber down.
Oh, my goodness. What a great story.
Danny liked that one. He liked that one.
Danny Ford, and I have not seen Danny in a long time, but I knew him really well when he coached at Clemson and later at Arkansas. I would rank Danny among the greatest characters to ever coach in big time college football. Just truly a remarkable guy. Grew up in Gadsden, Alabama. And we are coming back. If you'd like to give us a call with your favorite, I'm not about to go down that road. We've had enough Heisman favorites for the day. But more, if you'd like to talk about something else, we'll take your phone calls at 855-242-7285.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we welcome all of you back. And more phone calls right now. Stacy is in Tennessee. Hello, Stacy.
Hello, Mr. Feinbaum. It's a pleasure and honor again to speak to you, sir.
Thank you.
I know you're doing well. I would like for you to elaborate on what you know about the Tennessee spring practices since there's not been an orange and white game. I'm not getting much news, and on a follow-up question, I'd like to talk to you about one of your books.
Yeah, I think from what I've heard, it's been very upbeat, and I don't know a lot of inside information, but I know I've heard a couple of interviews or press conferences that we have run here with Heupel, and for the most part, I think he is pleased, and he should be when you have Hendon Hooker coming back and a lot of young players who gained tremendous experience last year.
I also understand that there's some very good recruitment going on for the future. Is that right?
Yes, it is. And you know, the only problem in the SEC is everyone's recruiting at an extremely high level. So you better
yes,
continue.
Sir.
But they're doing well. I think when you go back a year and a half ago when Josh Heupel took this program over, I think he's made phenomenal strides, and I think it's just a matter of taking it from point A to point B.
Yes, sir. There was a day in January I called you with tears in my eyes.
No, it looked like Desperado.
Yes, it did. Sir, changing the subject, I want to agree with Miss Pat about My Conference Can Beat Your Conference book. I loved it. I read it last fall. I enjoyed it from front to cover, with the exception of page 54. And I've been trying to track. I've been trying to track down your I hate theories, especially Tennessee.
Yeah.
I cannot find it on that particular book-selling website, library, or otherwise.
The recent book, it's been 7 years, I believe. I think it came out in July of 2014, so it's almost been 8 years. That was done by a major New York publisher. It was a big deal, and that was it was somewhat autobiographical. It was more of about that 2013 season, my first year at ESPN, when I traveled around the country with College Game Day. The other books came out, I'd say 25 years ago, and I catch a lot of flack about this, and you know what I'm talking about here, Stacey. I did overall about 60 different books where essentially were the same book. It was called I Hate, and then just fill in the blank, Tennessee, Georgia. And I have people come up to me and say, "Matt, I can't believe you said all that." And it was the whole idea was a joke. They came out in twos, where Auburn, Alabama, Tennessee, Florida. It was supposed to be you buy it for your friend for Christmas. And by the end of it, I finally just walked away after 3 years. I got so tired of writing the same thing. I mean, it was like one joke after another. And the biggest mistake we made, it was I hate. And then 300, I hate Tennessee, for example, 303 reasons why you should too. Why I got talked into 303 versus 103, I'll never know. And by the end, I mean, I was just literally going through media guides and the internet. The internet was just starting, by the way. It wasn't like in 1990, whatever.
Right.
You could just Google. And I mean, I was trying to find any name. I would put the sports writers and sportscasters and professors. And it's not, we thought about it a couple of years ago. I had a New York publisher say, "Hey man, it would be a great idea." And I'm thinking, would that be a good look for me to sit here at the SEC Network, having written 14 books about I hate Alabama, Auburn, Arkansas, and we decided against it.
That's the reason I want to read it.
That's my next project, I can assure you right now in advance.
They did pretty well back then.
Today they would, I don't want to give it away. I'll save it.
Ooh.
But I'm glad you read the other book. I'm really proud of that book. That was a lot of fun to do.
I laughed and cried through it. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
I will tell you, just so that you know, my local librarian tracked down the only copy of the I Hate Tennessee book in the state of Tennessee. Would you like to know where that is?
What?
It's in the Capitol Library in Nashville, Tennessee, and you are not allowed to take it off the premises.
Oh my
goodness.
Must
read it there.
Now, Stacy, somewhere in my house, I have a cardboard box with every single one of those. And one day I don't know where it is, because I still haven't figured out where it is after I moved here 8 years ago. But I will find them, and when I'm on the road this fall, I'll just give them away, because I really have no use for them. Well, the final book in that series was entitled I Hate Paul Feinbaum, 303. I did not write that, but I suffered through it. We will take a break. 2 hours to go. Sean Clifford, the starting quarterback at Penn State, on his new business, coming up shortly.